All right. Hi, everybody. It's RCFB Talk 194. My name is Bob Ekaeri. I'm your regular host. Thank you for joining us. So, when we were recording this live, there was an audio error, and no audio is coming through for the first several minutes. Thankfully, one of our astute listeners let me know, and we were able to start recording. So, I'm recording this intro after the fact and slapping it on the beginning of the show, which is going to begin right now. So, thank you for your patience, and on with the show.
Hello? I have nothing to say right now other than I'm pretty sure you've been muted this.
Yeah, Bobak, you've been on mute this whole time.
Are you kidding me? Oh, that's hilarious, yeah. Isn't it? That is.
Yeah.
That is amazing. All right. Well, you know the good
news. That's all we have.
That is funny. I think maybe I got so distracted by setting this up as audio that I just completely screwed that up. That's so funny. All right, well, let's start this over again. Hey, welcome, everybody. This is RCFB Talk 194. I'm Bob Ekaeri. We do these every Tuesday night, and it's an opportunity to talk about anything you'd like to talk about in college football. So all you have to do is hit request, and we'll let you up, just like I did Ron and Ski Masks Murphy, and we'll talk about whatever topics you'd like to talk about. And it's been, again, it's the offseason, it's May. Historically, this has been the quietest time, but it has absolutely not been that way this offseason. Last offseason was pretty busy, and this offseason just keeps rolling around. And quite frankly, starting next year, the shorter offseasons, because the season's going to go later into January. But one of the things that I just wanted to kind of touch on really quick, before I get into kind of the real meat and potatoes, and that are the lawsuits, the big lawsuits that are happening right now, several of which have been filed recently. But just wanted to first say we wanted to thank Andy Staples for joining us. He's a great guy. I've had a chance to talk to him at a couple of media events. He came and did an AMA, which was good, covered every topic. He was one guy, and again, I love when people ask questions, but he did something that usually doesn't get answered. He asked like five paragraphs. Think about the person coming to do an AMA. They may not be a Redditor. They may not be someone who types a lot. So they see five paragraphs, their eyes kind of roll, and they move on to the next one. So Andy's the type of guy who answers those questions. He's always been really kind of a sharper guy, always willing to kind of dive into it. And I recommend checking that out. I still love that. I was surprised. Somebody joked about the fact that the same guy who created On3, where he works, also previously created 247, and before that created Rivals. You know, what's his next one going to be? And Andy Staples actually took that one. He said he guesses it's going to be fourth one or foreplay or something like that. But that's just Andy's kind of humor. So I recommend checking that out if you get a chance. On a lighter note, before we dive into the big stuff, I always like to kind of touch on some of the lighter topics out there. McAllister, which is a D3 school here, actually in the Twin Cities where I live, but it's in St. Paul. They're the McAllister Scots, which I guess makes sense. They've got, you know, a shield with a tartan pattern on it, but they never had a mascot. So apparently, I was unaware of this, but when they announced it, I had to share it. They decided to have a mascot committee. They got suggestions. So they had two finalists, and one was a Highland cow. So if you've ever seen like a Shaggy Bevo website or one of those, like with all the long hair cow, the other one was a Loch Ness monster. So they announced that the Highland cow has won, the Highland coo. I think they're kind of going joking on the Scottish accent, but that's apparently, I looked it up, that's how people like to spell it out, like it's, I guess, pronounced. They're going to, I guess, demonstrate or bring out, I should say, a costume mascot next season. I thought the Loch Ness monster would have been cool, but I didn't think they did mock-ups, but they actually did mock-ups of the what the logo would look like, and it was a little disappointing. So I guess the McAllister Scots picked the better one. This Highland cow, I recommend looking it up. It looks really neat. We featured it on RCFB on the Twitter account sometime last week, I want to say. Where I was before I realized I was totally not muted this entire time was the story that came out from John Wilner of the Pac-12. He always covers, pardon me, Pac-12 for the Mercury News in San Jose. He found out what's going to happen to what's left of the Pac-12 network, because yes, there have been layoffs, but it isn't going completely away. It's going dark in that it's not broadcasting anymore, but they still have all that equipment they paid for, all that stuff. So they're trying to come up with a way to use it. So apparently the Pac-12 is now going to go into another revenue stream by producing external events after the network goes dark in June. So that means, you know, they have 9 broadcast control rooms, international infrastructure. They're basically going to try and see if the CW, Apple, Amazon, maybe even, you know, ESPN Plus broadcast are looking for a team to take care of some stuff for them. And now I guess they're going Merc. So we'll see where that goes. You know, maybe if your friend has a bar mitzvah or you want to film your wedding, you could maybe hire the Pac-12 Network. Who knows? So that's where they're going right now. I guarantee you the quality of equipment is going to be better than anything probably you've ever seen on ESPN Plus, because some of those broadcasts are, whew. So that's, again, went on the lighter side of things. So again, now we're going to dive into some of the meteor stuff. If you'd like to join the conversation, please feel free to hit request. It's interesting because I know last week we decided to try this video aspect of it, so I decided to do it again, and apparently forgot to hit mute, unmute. But the idea was, you know, just to see how it goes. I was reading about it. There isn't a lot of documentation on this. I kind of dropped it, I guess, in late February, and like one or two Twitter accounts noticed it. There's a landscape mode. I would prefer to use that, but the early, and again, there's nothing that's been written on this recently. The newer reports are you can't see anything of like who's in the, like, I can't actually manage it. If you do it that way, you can only see yourself. And I like to be able to see who's here, who wants to talk, and all of that stuff. Because on my side, I'm off on the side, and I can see all of you in the audience. So I thought I'd do it that way. But the other knock on it is I believe there's a 5-second delay or something like that, just because of the bandwidth that is being sent out versus the amount of data versus audio, where there was like a 1 to 2 second delay. I would warn people about. Ski Mask, what's going on? I see your hand up.
Yeah. One of the topics I want to talk about is, well, two players, but same topic. Marvin Harrison Jr. and Jaden Rashada, as of this morning. Seems like NIL has taken a very dark turn with the way these players are supposed to be getting money, or promises of getting money, and people trying to sort of control the players. It seems like NIL has, we all thought it was going to be players rolling around in money, and it seems like schools use sort of that dream to their advantage, and now it's backfired. And I think Jaden Rashada filing a lawsuit will change things and shake some things up and maybe force NCAA to get things formalized. What's your opinion on these things?
No, I'm glad you asked, because those two particularly, there's several lawsuits right now that I want to talk about, but those two are the more interesting ones, only because they're a little bit more manageable. We're not talking about the very existential nature of the NCAA in the past, the present, the future, and where our conference is going. These are a little bit easier to bite into, and they're things that we kind of thought might eventually happen. Now, I'm going to step, the earlier of the two was, I believe, on Friday, or actually, maybe it was Monday, I can't remember, but this past weekend, I think. Fanatics, we all know who they are. They're obviously, they're getting a lot of critique for the newer jerseys they're bringing out in some of the pro sports, but they are suing Marvin Harrison Jr. For breach of contract from his final year at Ohio State. They claimed he failed to fulfill contractual obligations, and therefore cost them some money. So the idea that, again, I want to always caution that when I'm talking about this, because my background is, you know, a lawyer, I teach law at the University of Minnesota sometimes, I don't want to overstate things. And I always want to put the caution that whenever somebody's filing a lawsuit and somebody writes a news article about it, you're only reading one side story. And it's been completely biased towards the people filing it. But all of that said, I want to give you what's happening in this lawsuit. What they're claiming is basically that he signed an agreement, which would be a big deal if he actually executed an agreement. He was represented by his father, who some of you may know is an NFL great, and, you know, don't want to get into an argument with him at a bar for various reasons we won't get into here. He is advising him. So apparently what Fanatics is saying, after he signed the deal and accepted payment, two payments, he never actually did anything that he was supposed to do because he took a better deal that was out there. And they went on to say that he continued to say that he never had such a deal to begin with Fanatics. So they say the potential damages could be in the millions of dollars. There is some strategy in filing it when they did. Apparently they kept negotiating, or at least reaching out to the Harrison family or the Harrison group, however you want to say it, and asking them to settle it. And they never did. And they apparently said, even after he got drafted, we said up to him, can we please solve this one now that you know, you're going to have some financial wherewithal. Not that he didn't already with, you know, obviously his dad was quite successful, but They decided, I guess they reached a point where they couldn't come to an agreement. Therefore, the lawsuit was filed. We'll see where it goes. It's notable only because this is the first time, at least we've seen, a major player. And Marvin Harrison Jr. is obviously a very good player at what he does. And he was taken as high as he was in the draft for his ability as basically, the top receiver. But the question was, would they ever try to sue to enforce a contract like this? And here we have one. Now, I think there's a little bit of bias here, just because I think it was fun to read the responses on RCFB, because some people don't like Fanatics, and there are very good reasons why some people are very frustrated with Fanatics. So, some people want to see Marvin Harrison Jr. win, some people want to see Fanatics win. I just think it's an interesting kind of it's an interesting signal that these types of lawsuits could happen if you decide to agree to do an NIL deal. You may be you should be held liable for not fulfilling your side of the contract, because this is a contract and these are business transactions in the NIL world. So sometimes that happens. Now, that brings up, of course, the lawsuit that was filed today. And again, I caution that we only have one side of this, is Jaden Rashada, the saga that we had. Obviously, many of you may remember last offseason, he became a poster child of NIL in his own right, only because he was supposedly being offered something in the neighborhood of $9 million to go to Miami and play for them. Some people would obviously pulling in John Ruiz, who's kind of a little bit busy with his company. He hasn't really been a big fish recently. And then at the last second, supposedly Florida was able to get him to flip with an amount of money that at this point seems to have been settled, that they were supposedly going to give him something in the range of $13 million. Not all at once, but at some total sum of money based on, I don't know if there were benchmarks, but some things would have to be done. And then it famously fell through after all of the weeks of people just throwing their hands up to talk about how crazy this amount of money was. It's not clear if again, this isn't the school itself. The NIL collective had the money to begin with. So this saga is something that I think a lot of people remember hearing about, especially if you were kind of into this stuff and into the kind of banter that was going on, especially the rivalry banter. But then the whole thing fell apart. He obviously opened up his recruitment again, landed at Arizona State. He ended up starting there, got dinged up a little bit, and then he entered the portal at the end of the season. It seemed like a fairly, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to go, because again, the head coach of Arizona State wished him well, right after it was announced he was entering the portal. And where does he go? He goes to Florida's rival, Georgia, because he's apparently, even though he just started some games at Arizona State, he's apparently comfortable with the idea of probably almost certainly sitting behind Carson Beck, who probably the best quarterback or one of the top three best quarterbacks returning this year, and to sort of develop himself. But after all of that said, now that he's settled in, they have filed a lawsuit against Billy Napier, some of the staff there, one of the collectives, and I believe, so I'm going to look this up real quick, one of the people who is involved with the collective, but one of the mega donors. So really, again, I'm not sure where this is going to go. It seems to be a lot of times, and I want to caution this again, my background's in law, I'm just giving you the skinny on a lot of this. It's strategy that you're trying to get them to settle. So it could be that Jaden Rashada is fishing for a settlement here. I don't think this is something that would run into trial. It would be fascinating if this reached the discovery phase, because usually the way it works is you file a lawsuit, the other side has X number of days to file their answer to the complaint that you have filed. So then we hear the other side's take on this story. And then after that, it can move forward. And if it moves forward, we get to a discovery phase. And then that's when people start getting that information, that dirty secrets. I don't know if we'd get that far in a case like this. But all of that said, this particular lawsuit is going to be interesting. He's suing on fraud, but also I saw an interesting one, tortious interference. What does that mean? He is saying that basically these promises that were not fulfilled by the folks at Florida are things that are going to, that interfered with his ability to get paid as much as he thought he should. So you can do that. Like if you mess with somebody's contract, if you've got like a $3 million deal coming up and somebody messes with the deal in a way that causes you to lose it or causes you to not rely on something, you can, that's an area of what we call tort law. Tortious in this sense, it doesn't mean like the cake. I always joke. I actually teach torts. You know, it isn't about that. It means like that's civil wrongs. Like you're not going to jail for this. This is just, you're gonna have to pay money for it. So I have no idea the legal validity of this case. We only have his side of the story, but it's an interesting one only because everyone was kind of waiting for this. It kind of faded into the background after he landed Arizona State, ended up starting, and you know, his own story kind of kept going. But here we are. He's filing that suit. Ski Mask, I know we kind of blew. That was a long, I kind of had to set all of that up. But those are my thoughts, and I think with these two, they are moments that we kind of expected for different reasons. I mean, in one direction, you have Marvin Harrison Jr. being sued by a company who he was supposed to be, I mean, who alleges he was signed a contract with them and a major company at that. And that sort of seems to imply that we could be entering a realm that, you know, these young men are signing contracts like adults and you can be held to it theoretically. And then on the other side, if you promise somebody something and you, you know, again, we don't know what was signed. We don't know if anything was signed in the Jalen Rashada thing. I have no idea. At one point I read that he had a very amateur person representing him, which may have also lost him some money. But at the same time, you know, here's the other direction, you know, the player suing the collective. So very fascinating stuff in all of this. I'm going to say that. Let's see here. I see we have one other person who wants to join us as well. College Football Lounge. College Football Lounge, what's going on?
Hey, good evening, everybody. This is Matthew. I'm here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I wanted to, since we're talking about legal-related things, the details of this proposed NCAA settlement with the, I guess it would be back pay for the revenue that was not distributed to the athletes previously. So the first thing that came to my mind, because there's some disagreement from the G5, specifically I think it was the Big East, is not pleased with the proposed percentages of distribution that the various groups are going to be on the hook for. So you have the P4, which P5, I guess, and then you have they had the G5 in there, and then they had even goes down to FCS and FBS. So the first thing that came to my mind when we have this discord over the settlement is, are we inevitably going to see lawsuits? We're going to see lawsuits over the settlement of a lawsuit. Do you think that's something that is inevitably coming?
That is, it certainly wouldn't be the first time. I'll be honest with you there. Those sorts of things have certainly happened in other, especially complex litigation, where there's so much money at stake, and that, you know, here people would be suing to not have to pay out as much. So I'm going to just quickly catch everyone up, only because some people may have heard of this in passing and not entirely followed the details of it. And there's no, I'm not in any way casting aspersions on that. There's a lot going on right now. So there were a couple of settlement proposals that have been going around here. And sorry, I just see one. Someone else wants to join us. I just want to get Rye Guy up here, although I'm going to continue with this particular topic right now. So there were a couple of different settlement options here. So this is about the House case now, and it's kind of a weird name because, you know, it's bringing the House, but it's House. This is the plaintiff in the named plaintiff in this case. And what makes it important is this is the case that is going to probably determine, really, it isn't a perfect settlement, but it is the case where if it doesn't settle, it could go to trial. And what they're suing for is the past, the present, and the future. And I say that because, as Matthew pointed out, they're suing for the last 4 years before NIL went into play. So let me be clear. So before 2021, 4 years worth of athletes who did not receive any kind of NIL compensation. Why did they go 4 years? That was a statute of limitations. They couldn't go any further back. Those people had lost their opportunity to sue over it. So they were able to gather that group. Last November, I believe, they were declared a class. So that allows them to sue as a group with one plaintiff. And, you know, that allows for a bigger amount of money to be on the line. And with the way these kinds of suits are set up, if the NCAA were to lose, they not only lose, but they would, or it's say the defendants, they would be required to pay three times treble damages, is what we call it, three times the amount. So that's an insane amount of money. So the NCAA isn't stupid anymore. And I got to credit Charlie Baker, the head of the NCAA. They brought him in, and he really is, he's more savvy and more utilitarian in his approach. They know that if the treble damage situation were to occur, that would be the end of the NCAA, and potentially several of the conferences would get dragged down with it. So ideally, they would like to do a settlement in a way that is more manageable. And the way you could do a manageable settlement is, for right now, they're looking at, I believe, $2.8 billion in settlement damages. Now, that isn't just one big bill. It's paid in installments. They're going to come up with an idea. They want to pay it in like 10 years. And when you do all of these numbers and crunch them all out, it means teams are not paying an incredible amount of money per year. It's still a significant amount of money. The NCAA would still be forced to pay out a big chunk of it. The Power 5, Power 4 will pay out a chunk of it. The G5 will pay out a chunk of it. FCS and then non-football Division I schools. So the pushback that's happening is, you know, if you're not UConn and you're in the Big East, let's say you're in some of these smaller conferences, you know that your players were never going to be getting the money that, you know, Caleb Williams is getting. They weren't going to get the money that these big name athletes were getting. So they're a little annoyed that they're being brought into this as well. The response coming from the P4 or just the FBS programs, if it's, you know, we're talking the FCS and non-football schools, is you all had to agree to these rules. Like, all of us had to agree to these rules. None of you tried to fight it. We all went forward with it to keep them from earning money. So we're all kind of a part of it. Now, that isn't the most fair way to do it. I know there was kind of an amusing moment with the commissioner of the Big Sky. Again, John Canzano, who is a West Coast sports writer who used to cover the Pac-12, but covers really all sports in the West Coast. The Big Sky commissioner replied to him in Twitter because he had a mailbag open where he's like, oh, let me know your mailbag questions. And the commissioner wrote, in the upcoming House settlement, why are the automatic five conferences, aka the G4, asking the non-P4 conferences to pay for 60% of the damages when over 90% of the money will go to them, you know, asking for a friend? So there has been that, and the Big East's commissioner has been an outspoken opponent of this. However, it sounds like when push comes to shove, you know, I heard it, you know, Russ Dellinger, he's great. He's been covering this so well, but I enjoy listening to the podcast he does. They said it's a golden rule, classic, you know, he with the gold sets the rules. It may be something they will not be able to necessarily stop, but as you correctly pointed out, maybe it'll turn into a lawsuit where they try to, I don't know if clawback funds, because I think they would just pay out what they're required to and then just try to cut what they need to pay in the future, because this is, again, being spread out over 10 years as far as the damages portion. Now, when I talked about the present and the future, this is the same lawsuit that could potentially, that should be requiring the idea of revenue sharing. So that's a pretty detailed conversation I tried to go over last week. Essentially, each team would be allowed up to $22 million to potentially distribute. Now, not every team is going to have that kind of money. Not everybody, every team has that kind of a media deal, but it says that they can distribute that to share with athletes. Now, how it's shared, completely open question. Where does Title IX fit into this? Do you have to pay every athlete the same amount of money? Do you have to pay all the athletes? Do we have to play men and women equally in all sports? No one knows that yet. So again, it will probably open us up to more litigation. But at this point, and I get it, it's a triage thing right now, because the NCAA knows that if they don't come to some solution on this, they will potentially go forward with a lawsuit that could implode them and bring down the whole system. Now, it might be fun to think like, you know, yeah, woo, bring down the system. But who's going to rebuild it? Probably the teams that were the Big Ten and the SEC will just come together again and rebuild it as they'd like to see it. And if you're not in those two conferences, I don't know if you should trust them to do it. Maybe they'll be magnanimous. I'm not sure based on what we've seen. It hasn't looked that way. And I just want to say a really important thing occurred not that long ago, earlier today. So about, I think the reporting comes from about 7 or 8 hours ago. But the Big 12 presidents have already approved the this proposed settlement. Each conference is going to probably have to approve it, or at the very least, the P4 are going to have to approve it. But the Big 12 have to me, I'm going to just say this. I completely say this is all on their commissioner, who has been absolutely fabulous there. But they've been on the forefront of everything. They won the knife fight with the Pac-12 because they were willing to just quickly go and take that ESPN deal and, you know, move and grab the teams that wanted to leave the Pac-12. Their ability to stay nimble in all of this has been to their credit. And try new things, you know, try fun stuff on their championship game, all of that. But they are unsurprisingly the first major conference to agree to the settlement terms. So we'll see who comes next. I think it's likely that we'll see it approved by the P4. This seems to be what they kind of wanted. And quite frankly, think about it. Like, these are, yes, they're nonprofit entities, but they're large institutions, and I don't care if you're a large corporation or if you're a very large charitable organization or if you're a large academic institution. One thing you like is a level of certainty, and having that House lawsuit floating out there, that's not certainty. Charlie Baker, when he was at the ACC meetings this past week, he said, you know, the situation right now is unsettled. And that is something that, to people who operate those larger entities, larger institutions, that's what they're most interested in staying away from. Not necessarily crushing their opponent in court. They just want to get it off the books. Just get it off the books, calm everything down. And that's one of the guiding kind of principles that's going on here in the background, and what's motivating a good chunk of the things that you're hearing in these particular lawsuits. Let's see here. I'm going to try and get Rye Guy up here. I keep getting him up, and then I think the system just sometimes it doesn't let people up. It's annoying like that. But Rye Guy, what's going on?
I'm kind of flabbergasted by the decision because no other Power Five conferences like said anything.
Well, you know, it's fascinating too. So the Big 12. Sorry, my audio is a little off. So the Big 12. You're asking about the Big 12.
It was extremely early. I was flabbergasted when they said that.
You know, I think, to be fair, from what I understand, and again, it. And this goes to an interesting article that was written by probably one of my favorite legal minds, and that's Professor Michael McCann. He's at the University of New Hampshire's law school, but has been around the block. This is really strange as far as most settlement talks. Usually they're done under wraps. Usually you don't hear anything about them other than maybe a murmur that they're having talks.
Exactly.
And then it comes out. But this has been so weird because it's been so public, and maybe it's it's a bit of politicking, because a lot of these are being, like, they're not just announcing it. They're, you know, like Ross Dellinger will say, like, I got the 2-page sheet. Well, who gave you the 2-page sheet? You know, So I don't know why they keep voicing it out, because as Professor McCann pointed out, like, sometimes these things can be, while they're not supposed to be used as evidence, it certainly can't help when the numbers are actually being thrown out there publicly. And if it falls apart, the numbers are already out there, so people are going to know it, and they're going to be starting to adjust their own lawsuits or their own particular changes on it. But I think the reason I'm saying all of that, though, the other thing is, from what the reporting is, the reason it's all coming to a head right now, why is it happening in May? The plaintiffs are the ones who are kind of driving this ship a little bit, and they said, look, if you don't settle by, I believe, and I've heard, and I'm looking at my computer screen, I have a really wide screen, so I'm looking.
You're fine.
You know, if May 23rd is, well, from what I heard, the deadline of when they're supposed to get an answer. Now, there's ways you can delay it. They could say, like, look, the Big 12 already said yes. We're just trying to get all our ducks in a row, and they might, you know, forbear a little bit. But it was a threat from the plaintiff's attorneys, like, this is your only window to settle this. Otherwise, we're moving forward, and we're going to aim for those treble damages, and you're all going to be destroyed. Now, if you know that they're aiming at the 23rd, then maybe the Big 12, when they decided to settle it, isn't, or agree to the settlement, isn't a big shocker. I think it's going to have to be at least all the P4 for it to move forward. So it could kind of leave them in the lurch. I couldn't see this turning into a piecemeal situation at all. But again, some of the details we just don't have. And that's part of the problem. As McCann pointed out, like, we are still only hearing bits and pieces of this. But I'd be fascinated to hear more. I'm hoping once it's done, we get like some long form from, you know, I don't know, The Athletic or Yahoo or whoever. I don't care. You know,
I hear you. I'm involved with the Oklahoma State NIL, so it's like, what's going on? Can we just get an answer, please? I mean,
you know, I think, and again, as an Oklahoma State fan, I wouldn't be upset that the Big 12 was one of the first to do it. I'd be kind of, because I like, as I said, I like Brett Yormark. I'm certain he's the one who just kind of looked at the got the advice and just talked to the presidents. He's a, I mean, I could see him as a convincing guy. Only thing that surprised me is he's shorter than you expect him to be. Exactly. I ran into him on the field in Houston and actually in LA the year before, and he's a nice guy, but man, he is strung up. Like, and maybe it's because it's like you could tell he's just like he's always like his brain is always like looking around like he's not plotting. I'm not trying to say him, make him sound evil, but you can tell he's just always there. So I could see how he could have maybe convinced his side to move it, because he ain't Larry Scott. Let's just put it that way.
No, he's not. The Big 12 is trying to fix itself, and especially after the Texas OU movement, I'm curious to see what that means, and the communication has not been clear. So no, I appreciate your answer, man.
Yeah, no, and I'm going to tell you, just as an Oklahoma State fan, this is going to be an exciting season. Like, the Big 12 is by far the most interesting conference right now, because I have no idea who's coming out on top.
It's the most, I feel like, competitive like league, because you could have anybody come out top. Utah could come out there. Colorado could. No one knows.
Yeah, if Colorado gets it together, they could be terrifying. But they could. But as for now, yeah, K-State, Oklahoma State, like Utah, Cam Rising, if he stays healthy, Utah's going to be kind of...
Oh, if he stays healthy. That's what I love about this league. But anyways,
Yeah, absolutely. And just as a reminder to those of you listening who I always throw this one out there, because I think people are going to get surprised at the end of the regular season this year. The top four conference champions are the top four seeds. So unless somehow the G5 champ is ranked higher than those top four, the P4 champs, which is very unlikely. You could have a team that's not ranked in the top four be one of the top four seeds, and then probably, not guaranteeing, it probably will come from either the ACC or Big 12. Not saying both, but possibly one of them, just because they beat each other up, but that team still ends up ranked high enough. They're going to probably end up being the number four seed. So it is funny when I, Shahan J. Raja, the reporter from CBS, he and I do another show called the College Football Survivor Show. And we did a mock ranking, and we shared it. And, you know, I had Louisville as my, no, I didn't have Louisville. I had NC State, and he had Louisville as his number four. We thought like they could be dark horses in the ACC, but they would be the four seed in the playoff.
The beauty of the new playoff system is you could actually have actual dark horses that can make a run.
Absolutely.
It gets me so excited.
It does. This is the most exciting season. You know, and I didn't even need the video game to get excited about it. I'm just excited about it.
That's just the added bonus of it.
Thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. Hang out if you'd like. You know, just feel like or just raise your hand. And hey, Ski Mask, I see your hands up. What's going on?
Yeah, just because you guys are talking Big 12, I want to say to Raga, I would say the best thing that could happen for the bracket is for Colorado to actually be good heading towards the end of the season, because like it or not, he gets a lot of attention, and I think just having immediate attention on Colorado would be good enough for the Big 12 to reestablish them, really, as being a power conference, because like you said, they're reshuffling right now to get themselves back together with Oklahoma and Texas leaving. So I think, you know, sometimes you got to make a deal with the devil in order to get what you want. And I think Deion's a deal with the devil. I mean, we saw the last few weeks with the way him and his sons were dealing with the comments from former players. So, yeah, he can get eyes on him. And if he does good, I mean, it might be pure evil, but evil will sell tickets.
You know, it's funny, too, because for all the brouhaha with him and his sons, you know, Travis Hunter ended up being front and center on the NCAA cover, which, I had this conversation with Shahan. I said, like, I won't be surprised if they fit Colorado in somehow. I joked they should have put Deion on the cover. It would have annoyed hardcore college football fans, but they're going to buy the game anyway. What will you attract? It'll attract people who are like casuals who just kind of brought in because Deion was there. But they decided to go a slightly different direction with that. But, you know, Travis Hunter's a great player. They put him. I love the three player idea. I thought that was a really cute one. We talked about it last show, but I created a whole like spreadsheet of all the, not only the NCAA football games, but I used to have Game Breaker, which was Sony's rival, the NCAA Game Breaker series, and a couple of those others, and it was fun to look back at who was on the cover. But I don't want to belabor that because gosh knows we keep talking about the game a lot. Looks like we have two other folks who'd like to join us. Caleb, I'm going to let you up, and then Elizabeth as well. So, yeah, when you get up here, just feel free to unmute. We'd love to hear from you. Yeah, go ahead, Caleb.
Guys, hey. I don't know how long you've been going on. Uh-oh, I got the little one running around.
I've been there.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys have covered Rashada. Have you guys talked about Rashada?
We did a little bit. That lawsuit is fascinating because it's kind of like two sides of the same coin. You have Jalen Rashada suing Billy Napier, like by name, and right. as well as, again, a staff person, I believe, a collective, as well as a mega donor over the whole saga. Part of the interesting part of that case is that he's suing to say that they interfered with an existing contract because he's saying, like, of Miami, because people may remember he was flipped from Miami and he had a contract there that might have been around the supposedly, allegedly in the $9 million range. He's like, they interfered with that contract and then, you know, they did fraud in their own is another count and then, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The flip side of that is what's going on with Marvin Harrison Jr., who last, sometime this weekend, Fanatics filed a lawsuit saying that when he was in his final year at Ohio State, he reneged on a contract that he had signed with them to do some products that apparently he signed with another organization. So we have two sides of the NIL, like two very key NIL lawsuits here that really bring up things that I think a lot of folks were kind of waiting to happen.
Yeah. Well, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this with all these things going on. I feel as though, you know, when as a business owner, they're going to be a lot more hesitant and or booster or whoever, they're going to be a lot more hesitant to hand out these NIL deals now, knowing that they're, yeah, they're in charge, they have contracts and they can do those things. But I mean, if the kid leaves, you know, you're not getting reimbursed, things like that. I don't know. What are your thoughts on businesses and collectives now being more hesitant to hand out these NIL deals? Because I think that's what's going to happen.
Well, I think, and I think Rashada, the whole Rashada story, I think put a big, shot up a flare that got a lot of people's attention, not just because of the money involved, but because it seems like it wasn't constructed well. It seems like the collective may have not had the money to begin with, as some rumors are. Another one I read and I mentioned earlier is I heard that Rashada wasn't necessarily represented by, like, if you're going to get in a deal like that, if there's a significant amount of money, I'm not saying like $10 million, it could be far lower than that. Go hire a good attorney. Go find a corporate attorney. It'll be worth the money because you want to make sure the other side's locked into something they can't get out of. But I heard he didn't go. He went a little unsophisticated on that too, which allowed the other side to kind of, you know, back out of it. But we'll see. We'll see. The lawsuit's just been filed. We don't know the other side on this. But all of that said, one thing it seems it taught a lot of organizations, you know, trial by fire because of how quickly NIL got thrown out there, that you should kind of hook these things to some sort of incentives. You know, like there'll be a certain amount up front. Then if you stay each year, like past a point of no return, maybe have one of the payments kick in when it's too late to transfer, you know, and a way to kind of incentivize and spread it over time. And there's lots of ways to do that. I don't want to say that's the only way. Gosh knows there's creative ways to write contracts. But I think we are literally watching people learn why there are these kinds of tradition or legal rules, or at least approaches to contracts, why contracts are written in certain ways over all these years. Because, you know, to make it kind of, I remember, gosh, before I even went to law school, I took a class at UCLA's extension, even though I went to USC, I've got my little Trojan helmet up there. But I took it with an entertainment attorney from very prominent, like it was CAA's, one of their top attorneys at the Creative Artists Agency. Now, movie studio, but also they handle athletes. But she put it this way. She's like, what we do is the most unsexy law. It's all contracts. It's just that the people involved are very interesting. You know, so the reason I'm saying it, all of these things boil down to just basic contract law, which I'm terrible at for the record, but basic contract law. And, I think a lot of these folks who jumped in were not necessarily sophisticated at it, so they weren't quite ready to do it. Or potentially the people signing the contracts on the other side, the student athletes, just don't realize the magnitude of what they're getting themselves into. And if they decide that, oh no, I'm not going to do this, they could end up in a lawsuit themselves. But it's fascinating stuff.
As Oklahoma State guy that does a lot of that work, they don't know what they're signing into. And that's the problem with NIL deals and why the NCAA, I hope, can congregate, because they're such a weak organization, can congregate an actual position where schools can just get percentage of their income. I mean, NIL deals with student athletes are a joke, just straight up. I have signed multiple athletes with them, and they don't know what they're doing. And I'll just leave it at that.
I don't necessarily blame them, because when I was their age, I certainly would not have known what the heck I'm signing. No, I wouldn't have even thought. I mean, what attorney would I ask? I'm now thinking, because I grew up in Bakersfield, I would have probably asked someone who was a personal injury attorney, because those are the people I knew. Like that, they like, yeah, that, like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
you're correct on that.
It is a contract. No one knows. Yeah, you know, no one knows. The amount of legal advice you'd get would literally be like, it would be spelling and grammar. I've been in that situation. Someone's handed me a document totally outside of my area of expertise, and I'm like, I know this is a legal contract, but I have no idea what you guys talk about in these, you know?
That's the problem with NIL, and I hope, I honestly,
you know, and of course we are going to get revenue. I mean, I think we are going to get revenue sharing, because the House settlement is going to create that. Now, how it's divided will be a whole other kettle of fish, but we're heading there. Let's see here. Elizabeth, you've come up as well, and I'd love to give you a chance to have your voice heard.
Oh, hi, Babak. Thanks so much. First, 2 points. I'd like to agree with Ski Mask on the Colorado thing. I would love to see them do well. I think that would be good for the conference. And I actually like Dion. I think entertainment, business, and great football. So we'll see with that. And then secondly, one of my good friends is unfortunately a Gator and an attorney. And he said the quarterback situation, he said it's actually not much of a case and they're going to look for a quick settlement. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. And I want to say, just as I mentioned before, we're only seeing with both the Fanatics case and the Rashada case, we've only seen the filing, which means we're only seeing the plaintiff's brief. And, you know, when you file anything in a lawsuit, you make sure those facts make it sound like you've got a slam dunk case. And when they get to discovery, they might find out other things. Yeah. So it's kind of TBD. Also, I'm going to say whoever is kind of giving analysis on the case, it's going to be early, you know, unless they happen to be, their thumbs were in the pie, they might not know enough at all. But it's fascinating stuff.
He said, yeah, he said it's obviously there's biased lawyers that he's talked to, and it's going to settle quick. So it'll be interesting to see.
I honestly have heard of this case. I'm going to piece out after this real fast because I got to go to bed. We're putting this on the NCAA blacklist in that case perspective, because it's like they're going to give us an answer. And that's what's going to happen.
absolutely. Yeah.
That's what's happened numerous times. And that's what's going to happen on this one, because we've all been watching it.
Right.
Yeah.
I just love the insider scoop, you know, behind the scenes, what's really happening.
Oklahoma State has watched your case. By chance, we have it on our board.
So let's see. We've got Matthew. I know you wanted to add something to this.
Yeah, I actually wanted to. I feel like, you know, it's college football and there's a lot of legal issues right now, a lot of legal news. I wanted to throw something out there on the field related. And you're a USC guy, so I wanted to get your take on this. And, you know, as a bitter, spurned Oklahoma fan by Lincoln Riley, I say that jokingly, but anyway, I want to get your take on USC this season. Are they going into the season with Miller Moss as the plan? And the schedule's fairly tough. What do you foresee? What are your expectations for the season for USC?
No, that's a great question. So, and I can say this much. I am a Trojan, and I don't hide from that. But at the same time, I remember going through some of those leaner years. Definitely made me way more realistic about because I was there. Well, I was there when they were actually probably their worst team ever. I was there for John Robinson's second tenure when he got fired. Then I was there for Paul Hackett, who managed to be even worse. And then I left right before Pete Carroll got there. So I felt my pain was rewarded. But all that said, I don't know what to make of USC. I think the best analysis I've heard of them is they're a dark horse heading into this season, because they're a little bit like, there's a few teams in this basket too, in which case it makes it very intriguing for that first game against LSU in Las Vegas, because we're going to see two teams where everyone's curious to see did a defense show up this year. I was impressed by the hires they did, but I don't know if 1 year's enough. Like, one off season may not be enough to turn that defense around. But are we talking about, it's like, is it a reverse Iowa? Are we hoping that, you know, Iowa can get just any kind of offense, like a modest offense, the defense will take care of the rest? I'm not saying USC's offense is going to be there to be the opposite, like the equivalent of the Iowa defense, but can they at least get a modest improvement on defense, be a middle team on their defense, and then let the offense and the talent kind of take off from there? All of that said, I do think it is Miller Moss's. As much as the UNLV coach, Malva, came in, he's a quarterback, pardon me. I think he's the young quarterback that they're hoping kind of to bank on the future. And I think he probably had that idea when he went to USC and took that position, because I know Georgia was one of the teams he was considering. But I think realistically, I don't think this is going to be a year for them to necessarily challenge to be all that well. I think they certainly will be a bowl team. I think they certainly have the ability to challenge a number of the programs they're going to. I'm very curious to see how they stack up when they go to the Big House, which, by the way, Michigan's now going to be serving alcohol this upcoming season in the Big House. But that'll be an interesting one to see, only because I'm very curious to see where Michigan is in all of this and how they've kind of reloaded and kind of, I mean, they have some great talent there still, but again, big coaching change and all that stuff. But I think the problem is Oregon's coming with them, and all attention is on Oregon, and rightfully so. I think realistically, if I'm looking at the Big Ten this season, it's Ohio State and Oregon, and they get to play each other, and that game in Autzen is going to be absolutely off the wall, because there's no reason that shouldn't be two undefeateds against each other. But as far as this upcoming season, I think USC fans as a whole would probably be okay if USC just looked healthier on defense, saw an improvement, and the offense was decent, and they go to an okay bowl. I think that would still be considered okay for USC, at least among its fan base. I don't think Lincoln Riley has necessarily put himself in the hot seat or anything like that. But I think this is a season where they want to see that defense improves, because he did something to his credit. He fired Grinch. I mean, I think people, it seemed like he did. He was, again, I hate to draw the Iowa conclusion, the apartment comparison again, but it was almost like, it's like, is Grinch your son? I mean, at least with Iowa, we could kind of figure out what was going on there, but like, what is going on? Why are you keeping this guy around? And then made some hires that were impressive. I remember before the USC-UCLA game this past season, I told my friends, joking, I'm like, why can't we just hire UCLA's defensive coordinator? And oh crap, we did. I'm curious to see how it goes. But I think, for example, I think Oklahoma is going to have a better season than USC is this season. Although it's going to be a tough one. I don't know what the ceiling is on it, but it's going to be a tougher one for sure.
Yeah, I'll just say this real quickly so somebody else can step up here. Oklahoma's schedule is incredibly tough. So I'm trying to keep my expectations in check with that in mind. But that USC-LSU game in Las Vegas week one is fascinating to me for so many reasons. But I think that game is incredibly important for Brian Kelly. With how his first couple of seasons have gone, and the recent comments about, oh, we don't pay players at LSU. I cannot imagine that went over really well with the LSU fan base. So I think that game's a lot more important for Brian Kelly than it is Lincoln Riley, but that's going to be a really fascinating game to watch.
You know, I agree with you in the sense, I think it is definitely more important for Brian Kelly. And I think he and, I think it was the Boise State coach got a little bit, their quotes got a little kind of changed around a little bit, but I agree. No. I think he was just trying to come up with why they didn't necessarily win that bidding war, but they certainly are paying. I don't think they'd ever pretend that they ain't paying folks at LSU, because we all can now, you know? So, but yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see where Brian Kelly turns it around. And the other opening week game where two teams, I mean, I was kind of, this is a conversation maybe to have at a later day, but which early season game is going to have the most stress for the team that loses? It's absolutely Miami versus Florida. That game, I mean, whoever loses is going to be losing their minds because Florida has just paid a fortune for Cam Ward, that great running back out of Oregon State, and a bunch of other players. And what can Mario Cristobal do with them? He can recruit really well. He can bring in guys. And then, of course, the whole Florida thing. How long will Billy Napier even be the head coach of the Gators next season? We'll see. A lot of open questions there. Andrew, you've joined us. What's going on?
Hey, what's going on, man? How are you?
Good.
Hey, you know, I wanted to talk about Dabo, but, you know, real quick, I wanted just to comment on the Rashada thing. I you know, maybe there is no merit to the lawsuit, but I think people need to remember, like, that sometimes who the plaintiff and defendants are, like, matter. Because, like, I come from, like, the insurance industry, and, you know, and when the insurance carrier denies a claim, even if it's, like, you know, totally merited, if it ever gets to a jury trial and it's the big bad insurance company against somebody who got a claim denied, juries decide, you know, tend to go with the person who sues. And so I just think, like, University of Florida, big bad University of Florida, plus the rich coach, you know, taking money away from a young guy. I would just say that, keep that in mind. And they probably will want to settle out of court because they don't want to get to the point where the coach is getting deposed and stuff like that. And stuff is getting, you know, the seedy stuff of recruiting mm-hmm. is going to get leaked. So I think that there is merit there. So,
before we hit Dabo, I just want to say we're seeing the reverse of that with the plaintiff in the Marvin Harrison case, because so many people have negative views of Fanatics that they want to, they immediately are like, well, I hope Harrison just buries them. I'm like, okay, but if he signed a contract and didn't do anything, he's actually kind of a villain in this. But I mean, I'm not saying, you know, at least legally, but again, they're in the same stage. We just have the plaintiff's view on it. And you're absolutely right. That is something that comes up a lot.
The actors, you know, and it, like, matter. But hey, you know, on Dabo, I just wonder, I wonder why the press doesn't press him more on his stance for transfers. And the reason why I ask is, like, I would simply ask him that hey, I think if you would have gotten one transfer each of the last 2 years, you probably would have been a playoff team. Like, after 2021, DJU was pretty bad in 2021, and Dabo doubled down in 2022 and went with him. What if he would have cut bait with DJU and gotten Bo Nix instead of Oregon? Wouldn't you think Clemson would be right there as a playoff contender? And then the second one is, why did you let your biggest rival get Keon Coleman in the spring portal? When you had, you know, no top end wide receivers, I just don't understand why anybody, because you don't have to do your whole team as a portal team like Lane Kiffin or Deion, but just throw out some names. I mean, do you agree? I mean, do you agree with that analysis that if he would have made those, just even one of those guys that he brings in, they're a potential playoff team, right?
Yeah, I think this has been one of the weirdest kind of conundrums as just watching as an observer, like, why is Dabo so against it? Now, you can kind of, I mean, you can come to a conclusion, a pretty logical conclusion, why he does this. He just, it's old school, you know, believes in almost a high school mentality of, like, you know, you've stuck with the program, now you get your shot, you know, and you earn it. But at the same time, he likes to stick inside with the people he's brought in. I mean, that was the statistic that came out at the end of the spring portal window. The four teams that didn't have any transfers going in were the three service academies who aren't allowed to, and apparently the fourth branch of the military, Clemson, who also did not decide to do that. Now, he also had a real banger of a quote, and I'm sure some of you have seen it. I'll just go ahead and reiterate it. So again, at the ACC meetings this past week, he said, this is early in last week. It was basically the day after we recorded last Tuesday's show. He was asked why Clemson didn't sign any transfer portal players. And again, he was being cheeky here. You have to realize there's a grin on his face when he's saying this, because he loves to kind of tease his haters, so to speak. Every player is technically a transfer. We just signed a whole class of guys transferring from high school. So I mean, again, he wasn't like some people, again, take it out of context and don't realize like, no, he knows exactly what he's saying. This guy goes back, by the way, to what the beginning of that question. We're like, why doesn't the media push him harder? They try. I think a lot of the press do try, but some of these guys, and I think part of it is the charisma of head coaches. Like, they get all these kids to want to go and play for them. They get, you know, other coaches to want to go and spend some of their coaching career with them. Like, you know, they trust them to kind of help elevate their own careers as they go. So guys like Dabo, they're not dumb, you know. So, and they're some of them are real witty. Like, Mike Leach was the king of that. Like, if you watch his interviews when he didn't want to answer a question, he would just kind of like take the question, listen to it, and just kind of answer something else. I still remember the moment I will never forget was an interview with him when he was at Wazoo talking about, you know, is your quarterback injured? Is he going to play? Oh, he's healthy as a horse. And in the background, in his jersey on crutches, is the guy passing in the background behind Mike Leach. Like, he was just always willing to, like, you could not get the answer. So Dabo's that kind of guy. He can absolutely smile and charm you and just completely answer something whatever he wants to, or just answer the question he wants to hear. And you know, there's only so much the press can do. It's not a legal deposition. You know, I always say there's a lot of overlap between what journalists do and what lawyers do in some ways, but at the same time, you can't compel an answer as a journalist.
Sure.
And he's his own character. But I don't know how much more this can go on for. He certainly bought himself a lot of time there, from all this success. Cause certainly what he did at Clemson is, I mean, he should be a Hall of Fame coach, let's be honest, definitely, from what he did at Clemson. But this is a weird, weird, weird thing to watch, especially if, you know, because I was thinking of that, you know, two head coaches, I'd love to see how their, and there's a lot of variables here, but how their career trajectories are going to go in the next, let's say, 3 years, is Dabo Swinney and Deion Sanders, because you couldn't get two more opposite approaches to how they're doing roster building. And I would, they're going to be, and it's wonderful if you're more of a scientific mind, like, wow, we get a pure experiment here. We get two guys that are doing the extremes, and then I can have my control groups or whatever, you know, but you're watching it, and it's utterly fascinating to see what's going on right now.
Yeah, great analysis. I just wonder if Dabo's gotten really self-indulgent, like maybe he's forgotten what got him those two championships, because he busted his, you know, he worked really hard and he got two generational quarterbacks. And it's like, maybe Klubnik will be really good this year, but DJU certainly was not a generational quarterback, and Klubnik's not trending that way. And then, you know, I think a lot of people forget that he took less money in his first big contract extension to pay Venables and his staff. And so he sort of had a head coach on the defensive side. So it just, I think he's sort of spun it in his mind that it was his culture that won the two championships. And I'm like, well, I'm sure the culture had something to do with it, but you had two top 10 quarterbacks. I mean, and Brent Venables. So it's just like, you might want to do some self-reflection, kind of like how Nick Saban did after Hugh Freeze beat him a few times. You know, he kind of, you know, totally changed how he coached the football team. So it's just sort of interesting. Dabo's doubling down when he's losing four games, going 4-4 in the ACC. It's like kind of crazy. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. And I think that's one of the things that made some of those other coaches so impressive, is that they were willing to make those kinds of changes. So I didn't want to claim that something Lincoln Riley has done yet, because we'll just see where it goes. But, you know, when he fired Grinch and finally just, all right, we'll just throw money at all these great coaches, we'll see if it works. But I mean, again, Nick Saban is by far the best example of that, and some of the things he's been willing to do. Ski Mask Murphy, your hands up.
Yeah, I just wanted to give Dabo some credit, because that interview, of course, he's hilarious. But you got to give him some credit for the stat, if it is true. He said they came into the spring with 127 players, and they left the spring after the transfer portal with 125. You got to give him some credit for, he may not be looking for transfers, but he's keeping the guys he has, and they don't want to leave. So he has something going on and still keeping maybe not a championship-level competitive team, but maybe a dark horse competitive-level team in this era of the transfer portal and keeping most of his guys. You got to give him credit for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do. And I do not want to take anything away, because clearly what he's doing there is keeping most of that team together. So people aren't leaving, and they trust him and they believe in him. And that's, again, that's part of what a lot of these great head coaches do. But yeah, this is an interesting one, excuse me, to watch. You know, I just saw a bunch of comments. I wanted to get to one of them. Everything Texas State. Hey, can Texas State get a shout out? Bobcat Stadium. And I did read about this, was going to get a rename, is going to be renamed. UFC Stadium. No, pardon me. UFCU Stadium for the University Federal Credit Union. I guess he didn't write it, but I remember reading it was, I guess, the biggest deal in the Sun Belt, $23 million. Oh, and Rebs by a million. This is exactly what I thought a mod of RCFB would look like. Well, thank you. Oh, not, you know, we all thought that we'd be handsome, and then here we are, you know, got the nice hair, got everything, you know. Good to see you, too. But let's see. So, you know, a couple of other little items I wanted to hit on, only because all the talk about money, SEC is huge, and the SEC is by far one of the Goliaths. But once again, the Big Ten actually paid out a little bit more. Big Ten paid out a little over $60 million per school. The conference as a whole had a deficit, but who cares? It's what the teams are getting out of it, right? You know, so in their latest tax filing for 2023, the SEC just a little bit less, $51 million during the 2023 fiscal year. Now, all of that said, it's going to be a lot, probably more money coming in, especially with Texas and Oklahoma joining the conference, as well as the teams that are joining the Big Ten. So lots of money, lots of teams. You can see why Florida State probably doesn't want to stick around the ACC. Another interesting story kind of related to all of this money. Penn State has announced they're going to do just a monster renovation of Beaver Stadium. It's apparently, I believe, the number is... It's high. I believe they're hundreds of millions of dollars on this thing, but it's going to look interesting from the outside. For those who have never been to Happy Valley to see the stadium, they nicknamed it the Erector Set because it literally looks like this thing has just been slapped together multiple times, just with kind of things they've been jerry-rigging together. So they're going to try and make it look like a more cohesive stadium. At one point, I did not know this. I was reading sort of the conversation on RCFB. Apparently, at one point, a long time ago, before it was the size it is now, they actually moved it from one side of campus to the other by putting it in parts on rails. And then taking it apart on and reassembling it again on the other side of campus where it is now, which is amazing to hear. Sometimes schools do different things. Like Kansas famously has their old stadium still on campus. Like their old football stadium for the Jayhawks is actually on campus. And then they built the bigger one that they're playing in now in the middle of tearing it down and rebuilding it. In fact, that brings up another story I read. So Mizzou fans and Kansas fans, if you don't know, like, okay, Kansas and K-State, they're rivals. They are. But Mizzou fans and Kansas fans. Now that's rivalry. That's the real deal right there. So the Mizzou fans subreddit. So I believe it's it's r/MIZ. They are trying to rent a billboard to troll Kansas fans as they go to some of their home games. Why? Because if you're unaware, as I mentioned, they're redoing the stadium. So for this upcoming season, none of the Jayhawks games are going to be at their stadium. They're going to be playing their non-conference games in Kansas City, Kansas at the MLS stadium. And then they're going to be playing their Big 12 home games at Arrowhead in Kansas City, Missouri. So their idea is they're going to be renting a billboard on the way to Arrowhead to kind of troll the Kansas fans. I mean, we've all seen trolling billboards before. I think it's cute. It's interesting that it's fans on Reddit that are doing this. My only critique is they have a mock-up of it. It probably wouldn't be approved the way it's designed now, only because it's using like the SEC logo. It's using some trademarks that belong to all of these schools. It's using a screenshot or a photo. I can't tell. That's a copyright issue as well. But I still think they'll probably have to revise it. It might just be words. It could be cute. And I think that's always funny when fans do that. Or, you know, obviously, I guess the big trend in Los Angeles was, especially with UCLA, was putting all of those banners on the planes and going around the stadium and all of that stuff. So I thought that was a cute one. I love that. That's what makes college football so fun. What doesn't make it fun is the NCAA apparently released a report, and I have no reason to not believe this particular report. 1 in 3 star athletes, not just any athlete, but star NCAA athletes receive abuse and threats by bettors, which is unfortunate, and we've been hearing more and more about this. I mean, it makes sense star players would get it more only because they're the ones that are make or breaking people's bets. A lot of times in garbage time, you know, why didn't you make that extra shot when the game was already decided? And that's unfortunate. I don't know how that can be entirely fixed, but it's just one of the dark sides of the sport. And if you're the type of person or you know someone who jokes about doing that, don't. You know, just don't. I just want to say that because, you know, they're still young guys. I remember when I was in that age, I would be a weird one. You know, we talked about this before, but the UC Regents have now formally approved the Calamony payments. So UCLA is going to be paying Cal $10 million for 3 years, and then they're going to revisit it to decide if they're going to renew it for another 3 years, which is probably going to be yes. I don't see why Cal would say like, oh, no, that was enough money. Thanks for leaving us and destroying the conference, UCLA. As I said, this is like a messy divorce. I still love the idea of Cal driving UC Davis down to visit dad in Westwood and dropping him there and telling him don't play with your cousins that are crazy. Probably talking about UC Riverside. I could see UC Riverside being a little weird. But then, you know, the chill guys on the beach like UC Santa Barbara and UC Davis and probably UC San Diego. But anywho, I could go on that. I could go on that path. It's getting late. I can definitely keep making those jokes. My goodness. So Jimbo Fisher apparently decided to shoot off a few fireworks this week. He says the ACC and Big 12 teams are becoming, quote, glorified junior colleges. Again, this is one of those quotes where it gets aggregated and you kind of maybe take it a little further. I could see where if he was saying that it's a money thing, where the talent gap or just, you know, you can be really good at one of these ACC or Big 12 or G5 teams, and then you're just going to be offered a huge amount of money to go play for one of the bigger money teams. And that certainly happens. But I don't know. Jimbo, you got all as people were people to point out in the comments on our CFB, of all the people to talk about a talent gap, this is a user named Seth Ambermel. It has to be the coach who is pulling in top classes and still couldn't win. I would respect the opinion coming from almost any other coach. So, yeah, it's a weird one, Dabo, coming from you. But again, that is what it is. It is kind of silly. You know, the CW, which is, of course, going to be a Pac-2 broadcaster, is apparently looking to add more live sports, potentially licensing ESPN Plus streaming exclusives to put on terrestrial television. So that'll be interesting. More football, the better. We haven't really talked too much about EA Sports College Football 25. It came out. I mean, the trailer finally came up. I got to admit, I played the living heck out of those games when I was younger. I wasn't that young. I mean, I was in my 20s. And my goodness, this trailer, though, got me hyped up. I thought I was going to be kind of lukewarm on it, but you know, it's amazing what happens when you don't make a game for 10 years and technology advances, that the game actually looks better. Who knew? My earliest edition, I don't have it near me, but I got a Genesis game still with me, and I was going to hopefully bring it up. But Ski Mask, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I was going to get to the CW hosting games thing, but a quick note, apparently, as far as the game goes, because the whole College Football Awards Association decided they didn't want to be in the game, apparently the one award decided to break rank and be in the game now is the Lou Gross Award. Out of all
I got
of them.
The email for that one. Yeah, I was like, why am I getting an email about why haven't I gotten? And it took me a second because I had to remember that none of the other awards, I think other than Heisman, are in it. Yeah. And yeah, because you got all the media members, we got that email, and I'm like, the Lou Gross Award. Okay, cool. So now we have something to fight for.
Yeah. Everybody's going to be in the game. You want to win the only legitimate award besides the Heisman. You got to make sure your kicker's out there hitting 50 yards.
I think it's great. It's so silly that they wouldn't want to be in that. That to me is bonkers. They were in it before, so why wouldn't they want to be in now?
I don't know. It's honestly somewhat a level of free promotion, I guess. People are going to see that more in a year than they see it just at the end of the year at the award show. So at least they'll have some brand recognition, but I guess, I don't know. I have no good explanation for that.
I mean, I know a lot of folks, this is how you really learn all the nuances of college football is playing these games. You know, it isn't just the plays. It's also like, you know, oh, wow. Oh, my player won that award. How awesome. You know, I mean, that's kind of what makes it fun. You start to learn more teams. I think I learned all the college football teams because I was playing college football. It was College Football USA, something like that, 96 on Genesis. Like that game, I remember I picked random teams I'd never heard of. I didn't know there was a college called Baylor. I grew up in California. I had no idea where Baylor was or what it was, but I tried it. you know, so I think that's how a lot of folks are going to learn about some of these teams, programs that they in their corner of the universe they just never even heard about. So that's why I love this. This is like the best way to evangelize for college football.
Yeah, the game is also how I learned all the rest of the teams. Not from me scrolling through them, but from me playing the Road to Glory mode, then having when they had like you were actually forced to actually go to class, quote unquote. But they actually had you actually had to go in there and like answer questions to get up your GPA and take tests, and all the tests were like college football related. And I decided to make my major college nicknames. So it's like having another nicknames and mascots of every team sort of made me have to like actually know every team from playing the game. And this is back in the PS2 era. So yes, the FCS teams, you had to know those teams too, because they were in the game. So yeah. Shout out to the Montana Grizzlies, I guess.
I love it. Oh my God. That's just great. Well, you know, we've been going on now. Well, at least it's been an hour and 15 minutes and probably about an hour and 10 minutes of you all hearing me because of that error I made with the sound at the beginning. But I wanted to just thank all of you all for listening. I'm going to go ahead and slowly wrap this up. These typically go in the off season. They used to go for half an hour, but now they go for an hour. I don't mind. It's great to listen to all of you and have you join us here. So my name is Bob Akhayeri. This was RCFB Talk 194. We do these every Tuesday night at 10 p.m. Again, I'll turn the audio portion of this into the normal podcast. We drop it wherever you want it. This will automatically turn into a recording. I'll probably reset the start time to skip that 5 minutes of me talking and muted at the beginning, so it'll auto start hopefully a little later in it. And I think I'll figure out how to get this on our YouTube channel as just the video part as well. Who knows? I made it work last week. It just took a little while for me to learn that because there are all these things I'm learning of technology I never thought I'd be learning how to do, only because I do this as a hobby and I love it. Again, I'm Bob Akhayeri. I do this. I do the College Football Survivor Show for Advanced Sports Media with Shahan Jayaraja of CBS Sports. It's always great having you join us. So thanks, everyone. Now I'm hang up and listen.